Hello, everyone. This is the infamous Rock and Roll Shrink. And as you probably noticed, that was an anthem from my not-too-misspent youth, from one of my favorite bands and one of my favorite guitar players who is, in my personal opinion, often overlooked. What I'm going to be talking about today is music and the role that it's played in my life, and how it can be used to enhance others. Oftentimes when I work with adolescents and young adults, music's very important to them. They often will be influenced by a variety of songs and artists and that sort of thing. And I think a lot of times adults misperceive the role of music and what it does and the effects it can have. And, you know, certainly there are a lot of negative songs out there, if you will, with negative messages, and certainly those are not going to be the greatest sort of thing in the world for folks who have a predisposition to be easily influenced and or who have mental issues that they're struggling with that could be not positively influenced by these types of things. But certainly they do not in and of themselves incite folks to various antisocial and or misanthropic acts. Because if that were the case, everybody who listened to them would have those sorts of reactions to the music. And it's sort of like the old joke that I saw in a cartoon one time where there was a cartoon of this therapist showing someone that the therapist was assessing a bunch of what appeared to be Rorschach cards, which are the ink blots that you see folks use sometimes. And the person on the receiving end doing the interpretations of the cards was giving all these, you know, sexual connotations to the cards and all sorts of things. And about halfway through, the therapist says to the evaluation person, you know, gee, you seem to be preoccupied with sex. And the person says to the guy showing him the card, well, gee, Doc, you know, they're your cards. They aren't my cards. So it's just very interesting to me how, you know, different people will see and hear different things and interpret different meanings out of things. And I think music and any form of art, for that matter, is very similar to that. I think what we also need to keep in mind is that the ultimate responsibility for what we do as people, whether it's something we see or hear or read, is up to us. And certainly folks who are in positions of supervision for younger people have a responsibility to help guide them and to sometimes filter that sort of thing. One of the articles I talk about in my posting is Parents as Positive Filters for Youth. And I think that's very true. What's happened in our society, at least in my personal opinion, is that parents have allowed everyone else to do their job for them in some cases, so that they have allowed teachers or the media or TV or radio or whatever to do the responsibility of giving their kids ethics and morals and a conscience. And obviously, that's not going to work very well. Also, what's not going to work is a parent simply forbidding a child, teenager, whatever, to listen to certain kinds of music or to read certain kinds of articles or to see certain kinds of shows on television. Now, again, I'm not talking about, you know, exposing a very, very young child to these things, but most of what I see in my practice, since I don't deal with little kids very much, are adolescents and adults whose parents are overly concerned with the kind of material they're reading or sites they're visiting on the internet or music they're listening to or that sort of thing. What I tell parents is, you know, what John Fogerty of Creedence Clearwater Revival knew in the day long before I got my many degrees and certifications, is that if you forbid somebody to do something, it just makes the forbidden act all that more desirable. I mean, we certainly saw that with the infamous, you know, PMRC movement of the late 80s, where certain politicians and their not too educated wives, who they didn't put a lid on their id, unfortunately, and allowed them to make idiots of themselves in public and make various statements about music about which they knew nothing, in my personal opinion, try to put labels on certain bands and certain CDs and albums that were being made. And of course, the only thing that did was that didn't warn anybody of anything. The only thing it did was sell records for folks, because kids saw the warning labels and they went, cool, and went out and bought them. So it had exactly the opposite effect is what it was intended to be. So the so-called moral majority people, who in my personal opinion are neither moral nor in the majority, tried to inflict their censorship, essentially, on things they didn't like and didn't understand. And the only thing they did was sell more records from the very artists they wished to limit their sales on. So they actually did these people a favor, in a sense. Be that as it may, what they would have been more productive spending their time with their kids is to sit with their kids and discuss the content in the lyrics that the kids were listening to, the songs they were listening to, so that they could have discussed it in a family, you know, setting. Why do you like that? What's cool about it? What attracts you to this kinds of music? Why do you like the lyrics? Why do you identify with the artist? And have a rational discussion about it. And I know a lot of parents go, oh my God, you know, I just that kind of music just really drives me nuts, and I, you know, can't hardly stand to listen to it. Well, yeah, but if it's obviously important for your kids, and you as a parent have a moral, in my personal opinion, an ethical obligation to parent. And if you didn't want to do that, you shouldn't have had kids. And part of that, unfortunately, involves doing things you don't want to do. So, you know, step up to the plate and do your J-O-B. If you listen to songs and certain lyrics, or, you know, look at movies your kids are seeing or whatever, visit the websites they're looking at, and discuss it in a very non-critical, rational, okay, why is this cool kind of fashion, you'll discover a lot of things about your kids you don't know, some things you probably didn't want to know, and some things you were very pleased to know. And certainly if your kids are engaging in belief systems or behaviors that are reflective of some of the stuff they're watching or listening to, that's great grist for the mill for you to talk about why some of those behaviors are disconcerting for you, why they're troublesome for you, and what types of things might these kinds of songs or TV shows, you know, engender in terms of real-time consequences. I think sometimes when kids see a lot of sex or violence on television or wherever, and certainly it's everywhere we look, and in a lot of the music we listen to, at least a lot of music I listen to, because I'm definitely a rocker, no question about it, we forget that some of those are simply fantasy type scenarios where someone's living out a fantasy. You know, if anyone's been to a Rob Zombie show or an Alice Cooper show and heard either of those artists talk about their music, they clearly tell you it's a stage act, and that they're, you know, living out a fantasy type character that they create, that it's not really, quote unquote, them. And I tell parents it's very similar to, you know, if you watch any old classic horror movies, you see Bela Lugosi or Vincent Price or Boris Karloff, you know, you don't think these guys are really vampires. You don't think these guys are really the Frankenstein monster. You don't think these guys are really the mummy. You realize it's a role they're playing for amusement's sake. Well, a lot of the rock stars are the same way. They're selling tickets. It's sort of like Cirque du Soleil on steroids, in a sense, if you will. And it sells tickets. And that's the bottom line for these people, is to make money, just like the grocery store owner. The bottom line is for them to make money selling groceries. It's no different. And if you're disturbed by some of the images that you see, or you're disturbed by some of the lyrics that your kids are hearing and some of the behaviors and attitudes your kids are espousing, talk to them about it. You know, one of the reasons that I created my music-assisted therapy program, and it's not music therapy for all you music therapy people out there, it is music-assisted therapy, which is a term I've coined, copywritten, and put into action in some of my individual sessions and in my group sessions as a way of processing lyrics in a very non-judgmental kind of way, in what I call reality-based way. And a lot of times I will use lyrics from songs that most people wouldn't necessarily see as therapeutic, quote-unquote. So I'll use lyrics from songs that talk about, you know, shooting people or, you know, having rampant sex or, you know, doing a lot of drugs or partying or whatever. And those fall into the group of songs that I've jokingly referred to as What's Wrong With This Picture Song, which I sometimes jokingly refer to as short-term gains, and I put the term in quote, versus long-term pains. And when I talk about it with folks, I talk about it with kids in a setting of, okay, so what's the consequence if you go out and have sex with everything with two legs, you know, that's willing, or whatever, you know, what's the long-term consequences of that? What's the short-term consequences? What are the potential negative after effects that one can have from engaging in that kind of capricious behavior? You know, what happens, you know, it may be fun once in a while to go get drunk, although that's never seemed appealing to me. Having never done it myself, I can't really attest to it, but having been around it quite a lot, it just didn't really look like anything that was particularly appealing to me. But, you know, what do I know? I'm a control freak. But when I talk with this about kids, I say, okay, so let's say you're having fun doing these drugs or doing these alcohol or whatever in the moment. You know, what's the long-term consequences of this? And even in the short term, what are these sort of, you know, long short-term consequences? In other words, if you're going to drink, you're going to get intoxicated, and that may feel fun for the first hour, 2 hours, 30 minutes, whatever. But at the end of that time, what's going to happen? You know, and what sort of stupid acts might you engage in while under the influence of these things? And what kind of potential damage can you do to yourself and or those around you if you're going outside of your house, or if you're driving a car, or, you know, having unprotected sex while intoxicated, or whatever it is you might be doing? So these are things folks need to be addressing, and I think parents can do a really good job by looking at certain things and saying, okay, let's look at this rationally. You know, why is this appealing? And do we have some alternatives to these behaviors that would be, you know, just as much fun or close to as much fun without the risks involved? You know, and when I was going to school, you know, I was the nerd kid. I was the, you know, the kid that didn't do drugs and didn't drink and didn't any of that kind of stuff. And yet I was this musician guy and, you know, would go out and play hard rock and heavy metal, but I was still not a drug person. So people didn't quite know what to do with me. You know, they saw the hair and that I had and still have, and, you know, seeing me, you know, getting spaced out playing music, and of course most people assumed that I was high, and I was, but I was high on the music. I wasn't high on anything external that I put into my body. I was high on the beta endorphins that I was getting from playing the music, which for me was a spiritual, and still is, a very spiritual, personal connection with, you know, my higher entity, God, Allah, the Buddha, the prime mover, the force, whatever you want to call that entity or entities, however you might perceive it. And for me, that's what it's always been about. So, you know, drugs and alcohol never appealed to me in any way, shape, or form. So talking to kids about it, I talk about alternative highs and ways to get similar kinds of feelings and to get camaraderie with their peer group without having to engage in those sorts of behaviors. Because let's face it, if you're drunk and stoned, the only thing you're sharing with another person is the high that you're on. I mean, how many meaningful conversations can you have, you know, stoned out of your mind or drunk off your patooties? I mean, you're not going to have real in-depth conversations about the nature of the galaxy or, you know, the most recent tsunami and wherever, or the most recent political moves of whatever politician happens to be running our country at the moment, which is, of course, another story, which I'm not going to get into in this podcast. But, you know, I never met a severe abuser, and I'm not talking about somebody who occasionally is a social drinker once in a while, you know, and maybe once a year blows it out at New Year's Eve or whatever, as long as they're, you know, in the house and they're not out driving and drinking or whatever. And while I still don't, you know, necessarily support that sort of behavior, if somebody's doing it once or twice a year and they're not doing anything else during the rest of the year, that's certainly a much better scenario than somebody doing it on a regular basis. So I've never met anybody who does substances abuse or dependency on a regular basis who really had a whole lot of self-esteem or who had a lot of self-trust or a lot of what we call self-efficacy, which means someone who has the belief that they have what it takes to deal, as Shakespeare would say, with the outrageous slings and arrows of misfortune of the world. You know, none of those folks who are drug abusers have a sense of who they are. They typically don't have a sense of how they connect with themselves, much less with their, you know, higher being or beings or their fellow humans or their parents or peers or anybody else, because they're too busy engaging and escaping and avoiding and numbing their fears and doubts or whatever they're numbing with drugs. So folks who are light social users on rare occasions are a vastly different body of folks than people who substance abuse on a regular basis and or who are, you know, cross the line into substance dependency, which the common folk call addiction. And I'll sometimes use those terms interchangeably for your listener out there. So, you know, if they're doing these kinds of things on a regular basis, you can find out through using a lot of the music they listen to and why they think that's cool, and talk to them about this and what are some and perhaps provide them with some alternatives, or talk about what are some of the reality consequences of going out and being blasted all the time. You know, because a lot of these folks are out there driving under the influence, as we know from, you know, the huge DUI type scenarios we've had, particularly in the state that I currently live in, which has, as of about, 15 years or so, enacted much more stringent under the influence drinking and driving type laws because of the amount of fatalities and trauma that was being seen. And I suspect it's like that in a lot of portions of our country. So, you know, better to talk about it and deal with it before that stuff happens than to forbid people to see the kind of shows or listen to the kind of music or whatever that their kids are doing. Talk about some of the stuff. If they're watching a lot of violent stuff, why are they watching violent stuff? Is it because it's sensational and they like the endorphin rush they're getting from the sensation of that? Do they recognize that the violence that they see on TV or on the movies or they read about on the news or they hear on their radio or their, you know, CDs or whatever, do they recognize that that's not reality? Right, we are in an age where we see so much violence and devastation in our world just from natural disasters, and obviously the media sells media by publishing violence and bad things that happen to people. And I'm not slamming the media for that. I'm just simply stating facts that, you know, that's how they make their ratings over sensationalism. And, you know, just like the Alice Cooper and you know, Rob Zombie, who are selling, you know, tickets to their shows based on sensationalism of a type, so are the news media folks selling that sort of thing on the news media. So do kids recognize that, you know, have they become anesthetized to the violence? Have they become anesthetized to the sadness that happens to folks? Have they seen so many, you know, killings and rapings and muggings on TV or in the movies or listening to it in their music that they become anesthetized to it, or they played so many video games where people are blown up and ripped apart or whatever that they are having a hard time differentiating the fantasy versus the reality? You know, even if you look at a lot of great literature, you know, war is portrayed as something, you know, heroic and something one does for one's country and goes out and kills the enemy, and it's this, you know, romanticized kind of thing. And when you get into the real world of blood and guts and gore and blowing people's heads off and killing people face to face, it's a totally different phenomenon. So I think sometimes we as humans become desensitized in general. As adults, we see how all this stuff on TV, we're not immune to that as well. And I think if you see enough of that stuff over a long enough period of time, you become desensitized to it. So part of it, I think, is regaining our humanity by talking about it. And one way we can help ground ourselves is talking with our kids about it, talking with the young people about it. Why are you listening to that stuff? What is it that is appealing to you? And are you able to differentiate and discern the fantasy of this on a video game or the stage actors playing a part, a role in a movie, versus what you're going to do in real life? You know, I mean, the Kinks said it many, many years ago in their song Celluloid Heroes, when they talk about, you know, the wish to be, you know, their life to be like a movie screen, you know, because celluloid heroes never feel any pain and celluloid heroes never really die. You know, it's this sort of immortality and you never grow old. It's the Dorian Gray phenomenon. You know, you can watch John Wayne movies over and over and over, and he's the same daggum age if you watch the same movie all the time, you know. So there's a real need, I think, for us to discern and help teach our young people how to differentiate between fantasy violence and real violence. And for those who are serious about, you know, killing other folks or doing harm to other folks, as you see some of the more negative rap music and some of the more negative, you know, black metal, thrash metal stuff. And I'm not slamming those forms of music. I'm just saying some of those folks have very negative messages. And part of that is their own internal struggles that they're putting out there for the public to hear, which I think is pretty brave of them, actually. And some of it is because of their views based on how they grew up or the environment or whatever. But for whatever reason and whatever, you know, ultimate goal they have in doing that, you need to talk with your kids about it if they're listening to that kind of stuff, rather than forbidding them to listen to it, or rather than just slamming the heck out of the artist, because the only thing you're going to do is result in defensive behavior on the part of your kid. So better to incorporate that and talk about it. And so one of the things I do with my music-assisted therapy program, as I was mentioning earlier, is I get kids to talk about stuff in music, and I'll pick songs out and play them in a group of kids, and you know, and I'll pick what a parent might see as a quote-unquote negative message song, and I would probably agree with them in some cases, and talk about, you know, what are the short-term gains, and again, I use the term very loosely, versus the long-term pains of living this kind of lifestyle. And while drugs might be fun in the moment, and while rampant sexuality might feel good in the moment, you know, let's look at the real life consequences of what happens with that, and what are the potential side effects of that. And, you know, it brings up the issues of things like unprotected sex and unwanted pregnancies and diseases in some cases which are life threatening, and, you know, someone's reputation, and is someone old enough or mature enough, which is actually a better index, to recognize the importance of having sexual intercourse with someone or having a sex act with someone. So, I mean, this brings up just a plethora of issues that are fertile ground for parents and kids to talk about stuff. And you need to do this very non-judgmentally. You know, you're a data gatherer. You know, I tell a lot of parents and even people when they're looking at their own stuff, when they keep journals, to approach this exploration very much as an archaeologist might go into an Egyptian tomb. You know, you don't see Egyptologists going into these, you know, old tombs and these pyramids and all these ancient places saying, you know, why the heck are these dumbass Egyptians not still here? They're all dead and their civilization's dead and they must be idiots. And they're not there to criticize them. They're there to learn. They're there to say, look at what they created and why did these people fall from grace, so to speak, and what happened to them. They're not there to criticize them. They're there to learn from them and be educated by them. And if you can take this archaeologist perspective with your kid and his or her music or dress style or friends they hang out with or movies they watch on TV or whatever, you're going to get a whole lot further And your kid's not going to censor what he or she says to you in future discussions because they're not going to feel judged. You know, you want to make sure that when you talk about negative behaviors and consequences, that you talk about them in a very pragmatic sort of way, that you don't get overly heated and excited and let the tone of your voice get carried away where it becomes too emotional and not rational, because that's going to lead to people becoming defensive. You know, and I have some of those same problems myself when we start talking about very serious stuff in counseling. And, you know, it's hard to be rational when somebody's talking about, you know, how much drugs they did the night before. And, you know, and you're hearing, listening to this thing, thinking, oh, my Lord, this person, you know, is lucky they're not, you know, 6 feet under. And obviously I can't react with those kinds of reactions. I'm going to distance the person. I mean, unless the person knows me incredibly well and I have a relationship with this person therapeutically, they're going to see that as me slamming them or criticizing them, or, you know, and that's just going to make them clam up. Or if they have a tendency to be self-deprecating, that's only going to make them want to deprecate themselves more. And that's the very thing I don't want them to do. You know, this isn't about beating the heck out of yourself. This is about looking at patterns and figuring out how we can change those patterns so that we don't have to make the same mistakes over and over and over again. And you can't do that if you have all these negative emotions, whether it's guilt or shame or blame or any of that kind of stuff. And, you know, I tell people the only thing those emotions do is get in the way of you changing, right? Because most folks who have an addiction problem recognize that they have it. They're not dummies, you know. And if they do, most of the folks feel guilty about it. They feel huge shame. They feel huge guilt about all the trouble they've caused themselves and other people. You know, and they need more negative emotions, kind of like I need more hair. And for any of you who've seen me in person, you know, that's not something I really need. I've got plenty of that to go around, thank God. I haven't lost it over the years, so that's been a good thing. You won't catch me in the Hair Club for Men booth unless I'm donating hair, okay? So, you know, again, approach this from a very rational information perspective. Get information from your kids. Talk to your kids and with your kids. Don't talk at your kids. There's a big difference. You know, that doesn't mean you have to agree with what your kids are listening to, or you have to like what they're listening to, or you have to approve of it. You know, you certainly can say that, gee, this is not something I'm really comfortable with you doing, or, you know, I get scared. But be honest about it. But again, as unemotional and rational as you can possibly be, and the more you can talk about it and keep the lines of communication open, you're going to be doing yourself and your kid a huge, huge, huge favor. Ultimately, if kids, whatever their, you know, form, whether they're a musician person or a dancer or whatever, you know, if they're involved in the arts in some way, that's going to be therapeutic for them. You know, even if they're not the greatest artist, singer, dancer, whatever on the planet, it's hugely therapeutic, and it beats the crap out of drugs or anything else, let me tell you. And it's kind of funny, and in some cases I think people see it as oxymoronic, but the music is one of the reasons I didn't do drugs, ever, because I was having too much of a good time playing music and connecting with, you know, what I call God playing music. So the last thing I wanted to do was take some substance that was going to dilute my communication with God and being able to channel that energy into my music and express myself. And while I certainly understand why a lot of very competent and even famous musicians either have done drugs or are current serious drug abusers, I mean, I get it from a psychological perspective. From a human perspective, I really don't get it. I mean, I just don't. Anybody with that much talent and that many gifts, it just seems to me a complete waste and counterintuitive endeavor to be using drugs when you're that daggum talented. But, you know, what the heck do I know, right? But whatever their level of expertise, if they're, you know, whether they're a good, you know, engine builder or dancer or singer or sculptor or whatever, you know, if they're doing something that's going to reward themselves, they can get great satisfaction from that. It's a great alternative to using drugs or, you know, shooting people or whatever their negative thing is. And it gives people a really sense of identity with a bigger population and a bigger community. I mean, part of the reason I collect instruments, and I have a ton of what one of my musician friends terms my babies, quote unquote, which are my musical instruments. And I have quite a lot of them, and most of them are custom shop models and artist signatures and that sort of thing. And, you know, the reason I have them is because they're part of history, and they, in a big way, connect me with other people in my musician community in a very existential sort of fashion. Part of, you know, when I play music, if I play music by some of my favorite artists, whether it's acoustic stuff or, you know, jazz rock fusion stuff or heavy metal or, you know, whatever, it connects me with those. I mean, when I'm closing my eyes and playing guitar, if I'm playing guitar by, you know, an artist or a band that I really like, I'm sort of envisioning myself there doing it. I'm sort of, you know, honoring that person and becoming one with them in a very existential sense. That's a hugely spiritually and emotionally rewarding experience, and you don't want to kill that for your kid, you know, regardless of what they're doing, as long as they're not hurting other people or hurting themselves doing it. So, again, I say, rather than forbidding them, talk to them about it. Watch the shows with them. Listen to some of the music, as painful as some of the music might be for you. If nothing else, look at the lyrics of the songs. A lot of the CDs printed out today come with lyrics in their stuff. And if not, you can go online and find lyrics to a lot of songs. There's a lot of places that have lyrics to the songs. And process them with your kid if you're concerned. Look at them. And don't jump to any conclusions. Ask your kid what your kid thinks the lyrics mean. Because, you know, as you know, some lyrics are somewhat ambiguous and amorphous. And sometimes artists write them that way so that, you know, people can interpret them in any way they choose. I mean, it's kind of like looking at, you know, modern art pictures, like a, you know, a Dali or a, you know, gosh, I can't think of the name. I'm sorry, I'm having an anomia moment here, which is one of my several learning disorders. But you know, if they're having, they're looking at art that is kind of ambiguous and so-called, you know, modern, you have no flippin' idea what the heck the artist is trying to convey, you know. And the artist is conveying whatever the artist was feeling at the time, and it's up to you to interpret it and make meaning out of it. Well, some song lyrics are kind of like that, too. I mean, if you read some of the lyrics of Bob Dylan, for example, or, you know, some of that stuff is like, you know, I mean, I read it and I kind of go, huh, are you kidding me? What the heck is this? Well, you know, it's thought-provoking. And sometimes people can interpret things in strange kind of ways that are meaningful to them, kind of like the Rorschach cards to that guy in the joke I told about earlier. You know, people are going to take things and they're going to make of them what they are, and sometimes they're accurate and sometimes they're not. But it's certainly a window into your kid's mind of how he or she thinks if you're able to talk about them in a non-judgmental way. Don't react when you read the lyrics, you know, even if there's something that's pretty blatantly obvious. You know, like, I'm going to put a cap in somebody's ass, and I'm not trying to be rude. I'm just, you know, that those are lyrics to songs, right? You know, it's pretty obvious what the meaning of that is. I want to talk about why that is something that an artist would write about and why your kid finds that attractive, or, you know, what does that mean to him or her? And talk about your own experience of it. Again, in as non-judgmental ways as possible. You're wanting a window into your kid's mind and how he or she operates, and you're wanting to share your own perception of that in a very honest but unemotional kind of way. And if you have concerns for your kid, certainly you should say them, but again, say them rationally. This is an open discussion. Talk about stuff, explaining to your kid why you are, as a parent, are concerned with what your kid listens to or sees, or websites your kid goes to, or whatever, you know. So it's really, really, really important. It's even more important if your son or daughter happens to have a fairly significant mental disorder, because certain disorders have a harder time differentiating reality from fantasy. And it's important for you to know that. And certainly some of those folks would be wise to limit some of the stuff that they see and listen to in order to minimize the negative after effects that might happen as a result of the interplay of their interpretation of what they see. Right? But you're not going to know that unless you talk with them about it. Obviously, if you have concerns about their behavior and what they're doing, then you seek professional advice. You know, what I often tell parents to do if they're, you know, concerned about their kid is to bring some of the material in to me. Let me see what their kid's listening to. Let me see what their, where their kids are going. Now, you know, since I'm still a practicing musician, I know a lot of stuff. And, you know, most of the kids I work with, you know, whether they're adolescents or young adults, are folks who are listening in large part to a lot of the stuff I was listening to, a lot of the classic rock stuff, a lot of the classic metal, the hair metal, the 80s metal. You know, and some of the folks are listening to more, you know, subdued classic rock stuff like Beatles or Eagles or, you know, Birds or whatever. So I'm really familiar with that stuff. And, you know, some of the bands are still around. You know, Rush, for example, is a band that's been around forever and a day. So they're still out there playing and stuff. And, you know, kids are listening to some of that stuff too, as well as some of the newer stuff. And some of that I know and some of that I don't. So I tell parents, always bring in copies of the CDs or bring a list of the bands or artists your kid's listening to. You know, maybe if I know them, I can give you some heads up as to what's going on, or I can direct you to some people who can. You know, and if it's really serious and, you know, your kid's doing some stuff that are obviously not appropriate, then, you know, get your kid assessed. Get your kid assessed correctly. Get your kid assessed with somebody who is competent to do assessment. Not one of these 10-minute, you know, interviews that I so often see, and that's a topic for another podcast that's, I'm sure, going to tick a lot of people off, but tough toenails. You know, these people that do 10-minute interviews and then want to throw medication at them, or these folks that want to do a 30-minute interview with no psychological testing and, you know, diagnose only on intake alone, which I think is complete idiocy, folly, and in my personal opinion, malpractice out the wazoo, despite the fact that that is the quote-unquote standard of care in our business, particularly if you belong to one of the mangled care panels, which I jokingly call pigs to the public hog trough, because there's no way that limiting, none of those people, by the way, pay for testing hardly ever, or almost none of those folks pay for testing. And they want you to diagnose on intake alone, on patient self-report alone, which I think is just ridiculously ludicrous. People aren't trained to know what's wrong with them. That's our job. And some people are going to frankly lie, and some people are just not going to say things because they're important. And that's up for us to figure out, right? And that's why you do testing in addition to a competent intake, so you know what's going on even on in the person's unconscious mind that they may or may not be aware of. So I'm a big testing advocate, and everybody comes into my office for whatever reason gets a two-hour intake and a minimum of some baseline personality emotional testing, so I know what the heck I'm dealing with, because I'm not God. I can't intuit stuff by laying on hands, you know, or 10-minute interviews or whatever. I'm sorry, I'm just not that good. And I would argue nobody is, frankly, even though we have people who will say they are, and who defend their 10-minute and 15-minute and 30-minute diagnosis with no testing with great fervor. And I frankly think those people ought to be booted out of the field and ridden out, tarred and feathered on a rail. And you heard it here first. So get somebody who does their own testing, not somebody who uses flunkies in their office to do their testing for them. And again, I don't mean to be rude, and that is the quote-unquote standard of care in our business. But being the compulsive kind of guy that I am, I don't trust anybody to do my work for me, and you should not trust yourself or your kid to somebody who doesn't do their own testing, in my personal opinion, and who doesn't score their own testing in-house, sends it out to third-party people for computer-generated reports, and sticks the test data in computers to get test reports canned, pre-written out because they're too daggum lazy or whatever to do their own testing. No. Anyway, that's a topic for a whole other podcast rave of mine. One of my many pet peeves about my business and related professions. So if you have concerns, take it to somebody who really knows their stuff. Take it to a person who likes working with teenagers or young adults and who works with the issue or issues of concern. Somebody who knows, you know, if it's something your kid's listening to and you think your kid's being negatively influenced by certain kinds of music or artists or whatever, don't take them to some knee-jerk person who's going to go, oh, yeah, you know, metal is bad and kind, you know, rap is bad and kind. You know, I'm sorry, but Mr. Mackey is not a very good counselor, okay? So take them to somebody who knows their stuff, who knows what's going on, who can give you rational advice, not knee-jerky, you know, Lordy, Miss Scarlett, I don't know nothing about no rap music, or I don't know nothing about no heavy metal music, or all that stuff is bad, and they all want to kill people and worship Satan, and, oh, my Lord, don't even get me started about that. So take them to a competent person who knows the area or areas with which your kid is struggling and with which you are struggling, and get some really competent advice, right? Not all mental health professionals are created equal, even if they have the same degrees and the same educations. They're not, you know, any more than two auto mechanics are the same, or any more than two certified electricians are the same. They're just not. Some people give a flip and are better at their work, and some people don't and aren't. So go to somebody you know and trust, right? And don't be stupid. Don't use somebody who's quote-unquote in your network because you're too cheap to pay for somebody who's not in your network who might be better. And I am not slamming folks who don't have the money to pay for somebody out of network, because I recognize there are a large portion of those folks, and I am certainly not in any way, shape, or form maligning them. But most of the people that call my office and call in for services can well afford me. They're just being what I call penny-wise and dollar-and-life foolish. And what I tell most people is, particularly if they're calling about a serious case where, you know, the kid's got legal authorities involved and could do what I call the monopoly syndrome, which is, you know, go to jail, go directly to jail, do not pass, go to not collect $200. you know, if you have one of those and you have somebody with a lot of disorders on the table, which most of my folks are, you don't want to go to some schlepper. I'm sorry. You don't want to go to some generalist. You don't want to go to somebody who's in your network because you're saving money, because you're not saving money. Because in the long run, what you're doing is you're putting your life and your kid's life in jeopardy by getting inadequate treatment. And I can't tell you how many hundreds of times I see that crap every year. It just sickens the heck out of me, frankly. And again, I am not talking about people who are genuinely don't have the money to spend because of their economic status. That's a whole different ball game. And those folks do the best they can with what they got, and I respect the heck out of that. It's these people who have the money to spend, but they'd rather go to, you know, Puerto Vallarta, or they'd rather have, you know, three, you know, uber expensive cars in their garage, or, you know, live in a $1 million home and can't pay the mortgage, and so they sure as heck can't afford somebody like me who's out of their network. Okay, now that's the kind of stuff I have just zero tolerance for. So, to summarize, music can be a great spiritual enhancement, even if it's a music that you don't necessarily like or understand. But some of these things are going to cause concern because of the content of some artists in some types of genres and in some media. Check it out. If you don't understand it or you're concerned about it, talk it over with your kid in a very non-judgmental way. And if your kid has a lot of concomitant psych disorders on top of the stuff, mental issues, whatever you want to call it, to deal with this stuff, and or is acting out in bad ways that you think are somehow influenced by, exacerbated by, or whatever, by the music or the videos or whatever, seek professional help. Don't ignore it. Don't think they'll quote-unquote outgrow it. I can't tell you how many thousands of times I've heard that. Oh, it's all the phase he was going to outgrow. Yeah, right. Let me know when Elvis gets here too, okay? So, be smart. Better to be a little paranoid than a lot sorry. Take your person to somebody who is competent, who knows the area or areas with which you seek assistance, and go to that person regardless, right? And there are clearly certain areas that I don't work in. Somebody calls in that has a psychotic person. You know, I may do an evaluation on them if there's an issue of psychotic versus not versus whatever. But if they truly end up being psychotic, I'm not the guy that's going to work with them. I just, you know, I don't work well with those folks. And I know I don't work well with those folks. And I refer them to people who do work well with them. And I have a list of folks. I don't work with little kids. The same deal. I have a list of folks who deal with little kids. Say, I have a list of folks who deal with geriatrics, right? And it's any competent clinician who's worth his or her salt is going to have a list of alternative folks to go to who don't do what they do. So you can always ask for that. If you call somebody, you know, don't be ashamed to ask what are their specialty areas. You know, some of us have internet sites, and I'm certainly one of those. Look up the sites. If you're confused with what the letters after the name mean, call and ask the person's assistant or secretary. And if the person doesn't have an assistant or secretary, kind of like me, who's kind of a one-man show, chief cook, bottle washer, bathroom cleaner, duster, vacuumer, and therapist all in one, call and ask, leave me a voicemail. Call and ask the person to leave them a voicemail. Ask if the therapist will call you back and just talk for 5 minutes on the phone with you, right? Anybody should be willing to do that. And it's one of the first things I do when people call in is ask them to give me a quick and dirty overview of what's going on. That's psych talk. Quick and dirty means short but inaccurate. Not as precise as a formal assessment kind of thing. So give me a quick and dirty version of what's going on. Sometimes I'll say give me the Reader's Digest version or the Cliff Notes version, same thing. So to make sure that I'm an appropriate person for them, so they're not wasting, their money and their time and my time coming in to see me when I'm going to go, oh, gee, I'm really sorry, I don't deal with that, right? Better to know that on the phone, because then I can refer them to people, and it's a win-win situation, right? And if you go to somebody and they're competent, stick with them. Listen to what they tell you. Do what they tell you. Don't think you know better than they do. That's why you're going to them, right? If you were so smart, your kid probably wouldn't be you'd be able to fix the problems your kid's having, right? And if your kid was having problems and your kid was so smart, your kid would be able to fix it himself or herself. But they're probably not, right? Kind of like me with auto mechanics, right? I don't know dog squat about auto mechanics. If my car starts making funny noises, I have no flipping clue what to do with that thing except drive it to the guy that I take it to and go, I don't care what it is, and, just fix it. And I've got a mechanic who is just freaking fabulous and honest as the day is long and does awesome work. And I take the car to this person, and the person will often say, do you want me to call you and tell you what's wrong with it? And I go, no, just fix the daggum thing, because I'm not going to understand a third of what you say anyway, because I'm a moron, okay? I know I'm a moron when it comes to this stuff. Fix it, tell me how much I owe you, I'll come there and pick it up and say thank you very much and pay you. End of story. If I was so smart, I'd fix the daggum thing myself, but I'm not, okay? And I have the same mantra for folks that see me, right? Please, 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 do what I tell you to do and you will get better, right? Honestly. And if I don't know what I'm doing in an area, I'll tell you I don't know and I'll give you the name of somebody who does so that you can go to them so you can do what they tell you to do, right? It just annoys the heck out of me when parents come in for advice or adults come in for advice and I, go, well, what you really need to do is this, this, and they go, no. Well, I don't know. Well, what the heck are you doing here? Okay? Hello, McFly. Jeez. Anyway, so that's the story. And I can tell you that music in my life is very, very important. It has clearly given me a lot of things in terms of spiritual and existential guidance and purpose. And it's been a comfort for me. And it's been one of the main reasons I haven't done drugs, because I didn't want anything to get in the way of my communicating with the Almighty with my music. Tell people it's kind of like having a phone connection with frayed wires. Nobody wants frayed wires, okay? To me, drugs are frayed wires when it comes to this kind of stuff. So, caca frayed wires, right? Frayed wires are bad, okay? So, I hope you guys out there in listener land have gotten something out of this. If you have a kid that you're concerned about, listen to the music, go to the websites, look at the TV shows, talk to your kid, talk with your kid, talk about the stuff, be as non-judgmental as you can. If you're having a problem, jump on it, go get advice from a professional if you need to, and work with your kid to solve the problem, and with the professional or professionals to solve the problem. Okay, so that is my spiel for the day. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you got something out of this other than irritation. And if anyone out there needs my help, feel free to give me a ringy-dingy. I love sending people in the right direction. Thanks a lot. Have a good one. I really appreciate your time and trouble listening.